Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to this episode of The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth, TG Site. I am your host, KME. I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Chad Rivera. And today we'll be talking about, you know, movies, television, news, things of that nature, comic books, all the hot stuff that's going on. Before we get into the full swing of the show, I did have to kind of address a couple issues. You know, I hate addressing stuff on the air, but sometimes it just needs to be done because things are, you know, kind of getting taken a little too far. But anyway, I work for the BDSIR network as far as what I do for, you know, the internet, as far as radio and shows and stuff. I represent BDSIR. I'm proud to represent BDSIR, and you know, that's pretty much the beginning and end of that. And recently we found ourselves entangled in, I don't even know if I really want to call it a beef, because I don't think anyone really at the network has any animosity towards anyone else. But, you know, there was a time where there was a little bit of tension going on, and there was an instance where I guess we posted a link to one of our shows on a Facebook site, and then it just kind of it got erased, and you know, our CEO Mike Knox took exception to it, and then there was a back and forth exchange, and you know, I did my best to referee the situation, calm it down, and you know, Mike was actually willing, you know, he even said to me, you know, let's, you know, get this stuff knocked out and out the way. And he told me to give his number to, you know, the person that the beef was involving. So that's what I did. He decided not to call. I guess he felt that, you know, he was, you know, for whatever reason he didn't call, which is his prerogative. I'm not faulting him for not calling or anything like that. But, you know, and if I had that person's number, I would have, you know, easily had given it to Mike and told Mike to call him, and I know Mike would have done so. So that there was a situation where there was a beef, and it could have easily had gotten squashed. And then after, you know, no one called anybody, Mike, and he told me with his own mouth, he took it upon himself to say, okay, look, we just won't, you know, have any type of interactions or back and forth with these people because, you know, it's not worth it. Let them do their thing and we do our thing. And I was like, that sounds good to me, you know. And I'm friends with the rival guy that you know, so it does kind of put me in an awkward situation, but I do think that Mike was sincere when he tried to squash the said beef. And then, however, you know, there's just been too many postings and stuff, you know, degrading and disrespecting the network. And, you know, if you have an issue with an individual on the network,
take it to
I don't really
personally.
have a yeah, I don't have a problem with that. But when you start, when it starts spilling over into, you know, cracking on the whole network, you know, people that haven't done anything to you, then that's where my issues come into play. And, you know, Mike Knox's wife, and she's one of the founding members of, you know, our network and stuff. You know, she doesn't need to be brought into this stuff, and that kind of thing is, you know, where I have to address it online. So, you know, I do think that Mike is still willing to, you know, squash the situation, but, you know, that kind of back and forth is just one, it's childish, and two, it's not even worth it, especially when we haven't talked about it, when no one at the network has mentioned your names online for the greater part of the last, you know, 5 or 6 months. You know, it's no point of, you know, continuing to let this drag on. So that's that. I don't think I'm going to need to address it again on the air, but I felt that I should start off the show by doing that. Anyway, Chad, I guess we do have a packed show today. There's a lot of good stuff going on. The network execs at Cartoon Network have heard your voice, and there will be a meeting on April 11th in regards to bringing back both Green Lantern and Young Justice. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. There's some new movie news. The Wolverine, the trailer was released this weekend. It's looking at a July 26th release date. We're definitely going to talk about that. You know, some new WrestleMania developments are happening. I might even get into a little bit of TNA. So that's what's going on. But first, I wanted to start the show off by just going over a little bit of TV news. Nothing too big to report this week. Right now, it's not looking that good for Deception. They are saying that the ratings right now, if the ratings stay what they are right now, then it's certainly not going to be renewed for next season, which is kind of a bummer to me because I do think that Megan Good does good work on the show. I think it's one of those shows that would benefit from another season, to where, you know, because it was a mid-season replacement, and it got kind of introduced with very little fanfare. I think if it had like another season to hang off of, I think it could get good ratings in a second season. But that remains to be seen. And there is a little bit of news with CBS too. They're talking about rules of engagement. And typically CBS, the way they use rules of engagement is it's kind of smart. They use it as a mid-season replacement when they put, like, when their shows that they put in that Monday 8:30 time slot usually fail, then rules of engagement kind of moves in and picks up that slack. And right now they're saying it's not looking like, well, they're saying it's unsure if it's going to be renewed or canceled. I think just because of the way they use it, it'll get renewed as a mid-season replacement again, because that's usually like a good show to put in that time slot when something like whatever that Brandon Routh show was, you know.
Oh, God, what was the name of that? Let me look it up. I'll find that.
Yeah, but when something like that gets canceled, you know, that rules of engagement is usually good to move into that time slot, or the Rob Schneider show or whatever. It's usually good to put in that time slot. And also, Monday Night Raw won the night as far as cable is concerned. It beat out different shows. Beat out Bates Motel, Storage Wars, Housewives, all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Speaking of Bates Motel, I know you got a chance to watch the first episode of that, and I've got a chance to watch. What were your impressions of it going on there?
I have to see a second episode, to be honest. I wasn't moved by the first episode. I'm, you know, just being honest. I thought it was kind of like You know, they made it contemporary, which I don't really have an issue with. It was kind of weird seeing young Norman Bates listening to an iPod, waiting for the school bus and stuff like that. It was definitely a little bit more graphic than I thought it was going to be in some scenes. And then, you know, it was kind of like it had that high school thing going on. And then the plot, I thought the plot was kind of strong. But, you know, again, a show like that, I have to sit through it. I have to see a second episode. And that's usually how, because I was the same way with Green Lantern, you know. I wasn't impressed by the pilot of, not Green Lantern, the Arrow show. I wasn't impressed by the pilot of that. But when the second episode came around and I saw it, I was like, oh, this is a show that I could, you know, stick with, you know.
Yeah, I caught the second episode, actually. Recorded it, watched it yesterday with my wife, and it's pretty strong. You should definitely check it out, Kaylee. It definitely advanced some of the storyline and some of the backstory of the characters, and kind of caught up, started some of the, you know, the different stories we're going to see this season. But my impressions, I was kind of thrown off a little bit about the contemporary side of it, because at first, when it first started off, it did seem like it was kind of set back in the, you know, back in the 50s or whenever, or 60s when it was supposed to start, because they were driving kind of older. They had that older car, and they had, you know, everything just kind of had that old feel to it. And then I see him rocking an iPod, and then, you know, all the different clothes, because the clothes of the characters in the first, when he first starts off, it's like the older style there. But I'll give props to, I don't know the actor's name, I can't remember, the one who plays Norman. He was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as a little kid, but he's
I remember, you know, who he is, but I remember him from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, what I'm saying.
But he's definitely does a very good job with the Norman Bates thing. He's grown as an actor, but I don't know. From the second episode, I think it's pretty good. It's definitely worth something to. It hasn't fully, you know, like say like it's like something like an Arrow or The Following on Fox, where it's fully grabbed me and brought me into it. But it's getting there. The second episode definitely is a lot better. You should check that out, Kim. I think you'll grow a little bit to liking it more. But I think the. Because what was the comment you make? It was called Norman's Creek instead of Dawson's Creek on
my Facebook. Yeah, I was watching it. It was just, I don't know, man. I was like, it was just kind of, I was enjoying it for, you know, I was so part of it that I enjoyed. My cousin likes it a lot. And like I said, I always give, like, any show, I try to give it at least 5 episodes before I just give completely up on it. If I think there's potential there, I'll give it about 5 episodes. Unless it's just really, really bad, then I won't stick around for 5 episodes. But most shows I'll give a good 5 episodes to.
I can see that.
Yeah, that one's going to, you know, I'll definitely, you know, check out the second episode again. Monday Night Raw won the ratings war, and they've been winning for a little bit. So The Rock being back certainly makes a difference. We'll talk a little bit more about this later, because a lot of people online and stuff have been asking me, because I said I thought it was a mistake to leave him off the previous 2 Raws. And, you know, they were saying that, you know, it feels more special when he's not there all the time. And I could certainly see that side of the argument. Where I'm coming from is when The Rock is not there, the rest of the show still sucks. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this Monday he was there, and the only parts of of Raw that didn't suck were the parts with him and maybe the opening segment, and that's really about it. So that's kind of my issue with The Rock not being there. It's like, if The Rock isn't being there, you at least owe it to the fans to build a strong show around other stuff, and that's not what they're doing. If there was a way they could make a strong episode of Raw without The Rock there, then I'll be all for it. I'm not going to trip on The Rock missing a couple episodes, but they haven't done that yet, you know. So we'll talk about that later. We'll get more into the swing of that later. Someone asked me on the Facebook site if we were gonna start covering music news. The thing about music news is I really don't listen to top 40 radio that much, or, you know, track album sales. I can do it, you know what I'm saying? It's just not something that I I'm not really interested in that. But I mean, next week I might,
I think it's someone trying to punk us into listening to Lil Wayne's new garbage album. I think someone's trying to pull a fast one on us and prank us.
No. The person that asked me does hate Lil Wayne, but
Did Double R ask you, Ronnie?
No, it wasn't Ronnie. It was one of my relatives. I could track music because we do play music on the show. I can at least, you know, look at the top 10 albums or top 10 singles or something. So we'll give a look into that next week, and maybe try it out once. But anyway, TV, nothing else new was going on. Nashville's ratings, people are saying that show might look to be canceled because it was nominated for, you know, a lot of awards, a couple Golden Globe Awards this year and stuff, but the ratings haven't really been able to sustain. So there's a slight scare that it might get canceled, but the TV by the numbers hasn't predicted cancellation for it, so I think it'll be fine. That's about it as far as the TV news. Do you have any the top 10 box office for us, Chad?
Yeah, I do have that here. Taking the number one spot, which I was kind of surprised about because I thought for sure it would be a battle between Olympus Has Fallen and The Great and Powerful, or Oz Great and Powerful. But actually taking the number one spot was The Croods, family picture by DreamWorks. That raked in $43.6 million, followed by number two, Olympus Has Fallen. That got $30.4 million. So quite the difference, $13 million between The Croods and Olympus Has Fallen. Great and Powerful Oz fell to number three over the weekend and made $21.6 million. The total gross on that is $177 million. Number four, we had The Call. That made $8.9 million this week. And then number five, the new comedy, I think a dramedy, if you want to call it, with Tina Fey and Paul Rudd in Mission, that made $6.15 million. Just kind of rounding out the top ten, we had Spring Breakers at six. The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, which has been an incredible flop, is at seven right now. Jack the Giant Slayer is at eight. Identity Thief, still in the top 10, is at 9. And also a movie that's still in the top 10 is The Rock Snitch. Overall, that's made $40.3 million. But what do you think of that top 10 list, Kami? Any surprises on there?
No, nothing surprises me. I knew that The Croods was going to be number one. It's really hard to compete with those animated movies, especially when it's like a DreamWorks thing. Those are rated G, and they're going up against movies that are rated PG-13. You know, a lot of kids are going to want to see The Croods. The reviews of it were moderate, they were good, actually.
Yeah.
So adults, you know, don't care about sitting through it with their kids. So I'm not surprised by that. Olympus Has Fallen, I think they were projected to make about $30 million, so they're well within what they're supposed to do. I am surprised that Snitch is still in the top 10. That movie was made for close to nothing, and it's doing very well for Dwayne Johnson.
Oh yeah, so, for sure, $40.3 million overall over 5 weeks. That's pretty good. I mean, for a movie that wasn't like one of the biggest pushed movies. I mean, other than on WWE TV, but when you're just watching regular commercials, it wasn't. You know, you see it every now and then. It wasn't like one of those big blockbusters, but yeah, it's done pretty well. You know, $40.3 million.
Yeah, I think that movie was made for like $20 million, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure about 75% of that was The Rock's salary. definitely nothing to it's gonna be a big year for The Rock, and I know that there were some wrestling fans who were not. fill in the fact that he was on The Tonight Show without his title. We're going to discuss that in length later, but, you know, that G.I. Joe movie was supposed to come out last year. They've had to do some reshoots on the movie. The reviews and, you know, the focus groups were not liking that movie when they were showing it last year. So that's, you know, why they have The Rock, you know, that's why he's promoting that on shows. Especially when the studio is paying him, paying NBC or whatever to promote it. He's not going to be promoting, wrestling when this G.I. Joe movie has to have a big weekend. And I think a big weekend for G.I. Joe is going to be, it definitely has to do better than the first movie's opening weekend. I don't know exactly what that was. But this G.I. Joe, I'm guessing the studio wants about $60 million opening week, and they might be able to live with $50 million, but somewhere along those lines. And if anything less than that is going to probably be considered a disappointment, because this is a big budget studio movie. $43 million after 9 weeks isn't going to cut it for this movie. You know what I'm saying? So This is a big budget studio. It's going to be shown in a lot of theaters. It's got to get pushed hard. So you wrestling fans have to kind of understand that. Just understand the business end of this kind of thing. As far as all that's concerned. Before we move on, I wanted to address the following about our shows. We are having some big interviews coming up for the Perfect Plex Talk Radio. I can't really get into them right now, but we've heard back from a lot of people that I think you guys are going to want to listen to, so stay tuned to the website, bdsirnetwork.com, the Facebook page, BDSIR, and just, stay tuned for the news, because we've got some really, really good interviews coming up. Right. With that said... go ahead.
I was going to say, just also, before we get off the movies... you mentioned G.I. Joe Retaliation. That's opening this week at the box office. So we got that coming up. Other movies that are coming down the pipeline that are opening this week, we have from Stephanie Meyer, who is the writer of Twilight. They're doing a film adaptation of another one of her books called The Host. And then another one that's coming out, both of these are going to get crushed by G.I. Joe. I mean, let's face it. But we also have a movie that looks just truly incredible, because I know that you've commented on it, KME, which is Tyler Perry's Temptation, probably the corniest trailer ever from that. That stars Jimmy Smollett, Bell, Vanessa Williams, Brandy, and Kim Kardashian.
But, that movie's going to do well. I don't think it's going to... take anything away from what The Rock's movie is going to do, but it'll attract the people it's supposed to attract. The trailer looks super, super corny though, man. I have to say I do think they have to find a better way of marketing. And I think people are going to see it, because I know my girlfriend's going to want me to see it with her, and I will. But it's just that, I don't know.
It's just the acting, and then it's like the kind of comedy setups, like the unintentional comedy behind, just kind of the horrible acting that it has. And it kind of follows that Tyler Perry, storyline that he has, where he has the woman that is like kind of weak in the first but ends up being strong, and, towards the end. That's just kind of how his setup goes for the different movies. But after that, the last to have new on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Academy Award, it was all over. We got Lincoln. Lincoln's out there now. Killing Them Softly, an action movie by Brad Pitt, is out. And also Parental Guidance, which is that horrible comedy starring Billy Crystal and Bette Midler. At least I didn't see it, but it looked horrible from the previews. But that's what I got for movie news.
Oh yeah. I saw that movie. It was what it was, Anyway, okay, cool. That's the movie news for this week. I see people starting to call in. So what we're gonna do right now is we're gonna get into a song, and then we come back. We'll talk about the next topic, which is our topic of the day, so to speak. and that is breakout stars from, like, TV shows. You know, you have a TV show, and every once in a while on a TV show, there's that one star who outshines everybody else, who makes it to, you know, Hollywood, to the movies and big screen, 20 million a movie, becomes that it person. And that's what we'll be talking about when we get back from this song, John Cena, Basic Thugonomics. This is TG
Site. Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me. Whether fighting or spitting, my discipline is unforgiving. Got you backing up in a defensive position. An ass-kicking anthem, heavyweight or bantam, holding camps for ransom. The microphone phantom, teams hit the floor, it's the new fight joint. Like a broken needle, kid, you missing the point. We dominate the conference with offense, that's no nonsense. My theme song hits, get your reinforcements. We strike quick with hard kicks, ducking nightsticks, bare knuckle miss through fight pits. Beat you lifeless, never survive this. Get forgot like all-timers. Two-faced rappers, walk away with four shiners. The raw rhymer, turning legends to old-timers. My incisors like a viper biting through your one-liners. New Dead Man Inc., and we about to make you famous. Taking over Earth and still kicking in Uranus. Word life. This is Basic Thugonomics. This is Basic Thugonomics. Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me. Word life. This is Basic Thugonomics. Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me.
You ain't advanced enough to process the potential for medical concepts. The objects are foreign, like block tests, fonts and sex are complex. Regardless of your finesse or your fitness, it's a condition of business. Your lame vision of an underground physical image, underneath to undermine your whole typical image with the precision of percentages and the collision of sentences. Poetry beats your mic. We untouchable like righteous sluts with no crevices. Streets unite, we rock brighter with summer beats. Your cats couldn't come this hot and the earth off in the summer heat. Forget who takes. Kill your birds the first time. Your better ain't worthy of my filler or worse rhymes. I'm better than night. Check the veteran stripes. Leave you beside yourself with fear. I'll kill you and bury you twice. And fight the cover of night. Tracking your flight like guerrilla warfare. Where the grass is dense. Approaching me the quick way to get referred to in the past tense. Dead that. When the light, the mic is on. The crowd is dead like an intermission when you on a tight
word
strong.
Life.
This is Basic Thugonomics. This is Basic Thugonomics.
Word life. I'm untouchable, but I'm forcing you to feel me. Word life.
This is Basic Thugonomics.
Word life.
Welcome back to TG Site. John Cena, the trademark, Basic Thugonomics. And we are back, and today's topic of the day is breakout stars. And Chad, when I was thinking about this, what was coming to my mind, the reason why this topic came to me, is when we did the 4-year anniversary show this past Saturday, and we were going through the top 10 list and talking, and one of the list names on the list was Jennifer Lawrence. And I just remember watching her on that TBS sitcom, the Bill Engvall show, with the blue collar comedy extraordinaire Bill Engvall, and it was a TBS sitcom. I don't think it was horrible. It was if she would have stayed on that show longer, it probably would have stifled her. The show
for
got
sure.
canceled, I think, after like maybe two or three seasons. And, the next thing you know, Jennifer Lawrence is doing movies like, X-Men and just, The
Hunger Games.
Just blowing up, and she's, recently winning the Oscar for Silver Linings Playbook. Definitely talented, definitely deserving of all the accolades and stuff like that. And that kind of got me thinking about, over the years, who, people that, you may have been surprised by or may not have been surprised by, who kind of broke out from a TV show to become like a serious actor, to become a big time movie star. Do you have anybody in mind, Chad?
Yeah, if we're talking about surprises, the first person that really comes to mind would be Leonardo DiCaprio coming off of, Kirk Cameron one.
Growing Pains.
Yeah, Growing Pains. Yeah. Coming off of there because, you know, essentially when he was brought in is when the show was kind of in the lean part of it where, you know, they do the formula. You don't see that so much nowadays, but back in the day where the show's kind of losing its popularity in the ratings, so you're bringing the cute kid to try to, you know, and reinvigorate the show. But he was kind of this smart-ass kid where he wasn't, you know, really anything big. But then he hit Titanic, and then he just blew up from there. He's one of the A-listers, you know, probably the top 10 actors in Hollywood going right now as far as, you know, grossing money and all that. So that's the first person that really comes to mind as for surprising because I didn't really see anything going on as a kid other than just being the annoying kid on Growing Pains.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Leonardo DiCaprio because he was definitely someone I was going to mention. I will say about Leonardo DiCaprio is during that last, it was like the penultimate season of Growing Pains, if not the second or third season before the last season, where he joined the cast as the orphan kid Luke. When I saw him on Growing Pains, even back then, the first thing I noticed is that he was one of those actors who joined a show, and he really didn't get in the way to me. You know, like those actors when they join the show, and they kind of get in the way of like what's going on, and like, you know, it's like the show is already in a good harmony. And this actor comes and just completely disrupts everything. And, you know, I'll actually argue that Leonardo DiCaprio on those last seasons of Growing Pains, I think he kind of added a new dynamic to the show. The story with him goes is during that last season of Growing Pains, he was offered the part in that movie, This Boy's Life, with Robert De Niro. And they worked around his schedule towards the end of his stint on Growing Pains to let him do that movie, and then he kind of left Growing Pains completely, you know, to start in that movie. That movie did very, very well for him, and it did kind of launch him. It wasn't like a movie that grossed a whole lot, but it was a movie that got him noticed. This Boy's Life did. And did a lot for him. I see. Look, Mike. Can I get a sentence out?
In the door and waved the 4-4, but I got up out of bed to say, "Down goes LeBron. Do not come in MJ's house and try to continue a record." That is all, people.
Thank you. You know what? That was something I did want to chat on at the end of this episode.
I had my eyes on the TV on Comcast right when I was, you know, doing the show here, just kind of keeping an eye on it. But hey, sorry for your luck, damn, for LeBron.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in, Mike. And you please, you know, join the panel if you want to talk. We definitely appreciate you calling in. 706. Who is this?
What's up, guys? It's me, Toph.
Okay, of course, Toph.
What up, Toph?
So yeah, right now we're talking about breakout stars, and these are stars from shows that you probably saw it coming or you probably didn't see it coming. Now, if I could go back and finish my thoughts on Leonardo DiCaprio, it's funny with Leo because he was supposed to be on Baywatch. He auditioned for the role of Toby on Baywatch, or Hobie, whatever the hell that kid's name was, and he was one of the finalists to play that part.
Is that Half-Lost Son?
Yeah. So it's just amazing that, like, that, you know, that's where he, you know, this, you know, he was going through the struggle, you know what I'm saying? Because had he had done Baywatch, we probably would have never have gotten, you know, the Leo that we have today. So, you know, sometimes these misfortunes, I mean, I'm sure he was probably real disappointed, like 12 years old and auditioning for a part, and you don't get it. And Baywatch was a worldwide phenomenon, you know, and I'm sure that was a part he wanted and he didn't get it. But, you know, it ended up being a blessing in disguise because had he had joined Baywatch, you know, he'd probably be like, you know, David Charvet or, you know, you know, whoever else from that. Or even worse, the kid that plays Hobie, who's on all the drugs or whatever, you know. So that's kind of what we're talking about, Epps. Do you know any breakout stars, anyone you think of that's like, wow, this guy came from this and now he's that, or she came from this and now she's that?
Oh, this really isn't my area, but since you brought it up, the only person that comes to mind right now is, I don't know if she counts, but the chick that voice acted Meg on Family Guy, I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Oh, no, she counts.
Yeah,
okay.
I would definitely say she counts.
Okay, who be her then? Because I know, because I've been watching Family Guy for a while, and I wondered when she did that Black Swan movie or whatever it was with Natalie Portman. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then she did the movie with Justin Timberlake, and now she's just all over the place. You know, not hating her, like, congrats to her. I was just very surprised that she did all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. She was on my list also. She, Mila Kunis, you know, she was on That 70s Show. She actually had lied when she auditioned for That 70s Show because she was younger than all the other cast members. And I think she put on the application that she was like 16 or 17, and she was only like 14 at the time. She, you know, got the part, did That 70s Show, did Family Guy kind of concurrently. You know, because Family Guy, because That 70s Show got canceled, not canceled, but it ended its run in 2005. A lot of people,
yeah.
Ashton Kutcher's done all right for himself. Topher Grace has done decent for himself, but she, I would definitely call her the breakout person from That 70s Show. What about you, Chad?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, she's definitely stepped out of it. I mean, it doesn't hurt that she's, you know, constantly making those, you know, top 10 hottest women alive because, I mean, let's face it, look at it. But one person that I mentioned earlier that I was kind of surprised was Jessica Alba because, you know, we've seen, you know, different people break out. But I don't know. I wasn't that impressed with Dark Angel. It was okay for a show. But she's
that was my favorite show back in the day, man. I can't even lie to that.
I won't hate on it, man. I won't hate on it just out of respect. But I don't know. She's kind of blown up a little bit out of there. I didn't really see much appeal other than kind of the, you know, obviously her looks. Her acting was okay in that show. But, you know, she's done pretty well for herself out there in Hollywood, you know, with different movies in the Fantastic Four that she did and some other ones that she's come out with that I thought were pretty good.
Yeah. No, we're going to cover the gamut of this because this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart because I love watching the journey of actors. George Clooney is someone that you can't not mention when you're talking about. And I see you there, Ronnie. You're off hold too. George Clooney, man, this dude had a journey as an actor. The one of the first things he did was a canceled sitcom called ER/R. It was a sitcom, not to be confused for the 94 drama he would do for NBC, The Facts of Life. He played Joe's boyfriend, George, on The Facts of Life, you know what I'm saying? So he was kind of playing second fiddle to Natalie and Joe and Tootie and all of them. And then, you know, he does, the 90s come, he does ER. ER introduces him as a sex symbol. He gets From Dusk Till Dawn. That shows his range of acting. I thought that, you know, you couldn't ask for a better first introduction to movies than From Dusk Till Dawn, because that was just an awesome, awesome movie. And he was able to kind of break out from ER, be the guy that's the star of ER to do all these different movies. He had, you know, minor setback with Batman, but I mean that even with the setback from Batman, you know, other actors that would have really like killed and destroyed him, and I think he did like just a great job of bouncing back from it. And it's almost like you forget he was Batman. One, because the movie was just so bad, and two, because he's the other stuff that he's done. You don't really hold that Batman against him, you know?
Yeah, and another thing that stood for him, too, is he also, after Batman came out, he was quick on saying, okay, yeah, that was a turd. You know, he made jokes about it, and he kind of rolled with it. He didn't really, like, you see some actors out there or actresses, they make a crappy movie, and then, you know, they'll go out and try to defend it, and, you know, they'll get real pissed when you bring it up. But he's lighthearted about it, and also, that worked in his favor.
And I think it's a rite of passage if he did get pissed at it, I wouldn't even – I mean, that's a hard thing to kind of overcome, you know what I'm saying? To, like, to be a guy who's supposed to be the next It dude, you do a movie that absolutely flops where everybody is just making fun of you and dissing you and pouncing on you. At the same time of this Batman thing, this flop was going on. He got into a little bit of issues with he said something about the paparazzi. They had this there was this thing going on where Princess Diana died and her boyfriend Dodi Al-Fayed, and they were being chased by paparazzi, and he said something about, you know, just dissed the paparazzi. Paparazzi took offense to it. They stopped taking pictures of that guy because they were like, "Look, dude, you don't want us taking pictures of you. Screw you, we're not taking pictures of you." So it's kind of like, you know, it was one of those things where the paparazzi, when they, you know, people complain about the paparazzi, but if they stop doing what they do, it really does, you know, kind of hurt your career. And he had that going on along with the Batman stuff. So for him to kind of rise from the ashes, so to speak, and become, you know, the Clooney that we know today, great stuff.
Sure.
And while we're talking about George Clooney, we might as well talk about Stacey Keibler, because, you know, of all the divas in wrestling, I really, like, I kind of always thought she had something special about her. I didn't know if that would cross over into an acting career, even though it's not like a, she's certainly no Meryl Streep, but definitely definitely a decent acting career, an acting career that a lot of young women in Hollywood wish they could have, you know, and, you know, dating George Clooney now. And, I mean, this is not something I saw coming, you know what I'm saying? I really did. I can't say that I saw that coming. I guess, you know, she did the Dancing with the Stars, and then, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, she really is at a point where she doesn't need wrestling, you know, like she never needs wrestling again. And if she stays dating George Clooney, she really will never need wrestling again.
Because she's done bit parts on, I think she was on George Lopez, she was on after a couple episodes, then she was on How I Met Your Mother too. She's done a little bit.
Yeah, she did George Lopez, What About Brian, How I Met Your Mother, Men at Work. She's got a career. She's done some straight to video movies. She's got a career now. She's got a full fledged acting career. She's, you know, dating George Clooney. I mean, that puts her that automatically puts her ahead of any diva ever in wrestling. What do you got to say about it, Epps?
Stacey Keibler. Unfortunately,
yeah.
I'm not familiar with her work. Sorry.
Be quiet, man. You know Stacey Keibler from wrestling, sucker.
I mean, I know who she is, but I don't really know what she did. When she was around, I wasn't watching wrestling. So I know she's dating George.
Were you watching Miss Hancock or anything like that?
No, I stopped watching wrestling at that point. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So.
All right.
Anyway, Ron, are you there?
Yeah, what's up, homie?
What's up, Ron? What do you think about Stacey Keibler's meteoric rise?
Oh, no, I mean, it's good. I mean, she's good looking, so that's a plus. I mean, only thing I've seen her do post-wrestling is her hanging with Obama and Tobey Maguire and those guys.
It's
a lot of perks you get for banging George Clooney. I hope she milks it as far as she can. You know, I don't think because once Clooney gets bored with you, man, he kicks you to the curb. So I hope whatever knowledge he's given, I hope she takes that run with it.
Clooney's average is usually what is it, like a year or 2 years or something?
Yeah, because I mean, there's already stuff coming out in the tabloids about how their relationship's ending now, and that's right about 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, that stuff has been going on for a minute, and then you know it kind of dies down.
But it is about the time though when it usually starts picking up for the Clooney relationship type you know, drama going behind it. Because I remember the model he was dating before, it was about 1 or 2 years, and then that was the end of that, because Clooney's even said, you know, publicly that he's not going to get married and all that. And so he just kind of jumps around from, you know, one thing to another. So
yeah, yeah.
I think
he's going on about 3 years with Keebler, if I'm not mistaken, because they started about late 2010, and now it's, you know, we're getting done with the first quarter of 2013. So they've been going strong for a minute. Another star that I want to kind of talk about is Bruce Willis from he started off doing Moonlighting.
Mm-hmm.
You guys
those
might not
two
be
hated
old
each
enough.
Other.
Huh?
I said what's notoriously those two hated each other while doing that. Willis and I can't remember the girl's name on the show. They
Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah,
there were some rumors that they did. I always thought they had a really good on-screen chemistry. There were rumors that, you know, they weren't the best of friends, but I think it was more along the lines of, you know, he was blowing up, man. He did his first Die Hard while he was on Moonlighting and then just kind of, you know, took off from there, and the rest is history, as they say. Great movies, international star. He's got a couple sucky ones in there, but, you know, still looks – how old is Bruce Willis? He's, like, in his mid-50s maybe?
Like 56, I think.
Yeah, he's still looks good for, you know, 56 years old. Real, you know, definitely and even on the Moonlighting show, some of these stars you could kind of see them being – there's more to them than the confines of their little hour-long or 30-minute sitcom. Perfect example of that is Will Smith. When The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air first debuted, I can honestly say I really did see him outside of Fresh Prince. I didn't know he was going to be the star he was going to be, but I definitely thought that he had a personality that was just too big for Fresh Prince, you know, that was too big for the small screen. And that show was, it's kind of a goofy show, but, I mean, we all loved it. We all grew up watching it. And for, you know, just, you know, to see what he's what, like, he's, you know, easily one of the top five most powerful men in Hollywood. He might even be the top. The most powerful guy in Hollywood, but definitely stars just crazy. Epps, are you going to tell me you know nothing about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Yeah, I know that much, of course.
are you surprised at Will Smith's graduation from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air to movie stardom, or did you see it? How do you go about it?
Man, Will Smith is someone that I've always been, like, I've always kind of, I see what he's doing. It's like, it was like a pattern, like, you know, he did Men in Black and Independence Day and I Am Legend. What I like about Will Smith is what I dislike about him. Like, he did all those big blockbuster hits and these crazy sci-fi movies, but he was like, you take an average black dude and you put him in this situation, you know. He's evolved though. Like, he can do serious dramas and stuff too. So he deserves it. You know, I think Will Smith is cool. I don't have a problem with him. I actually saw Men in Black 3 for the first time last month, and I was very enjoyed. I've always been a fan of the Men in Black series.
I saw Men in Black 3. I've watched that movie like 50 times since I saw it. Man, very, very good. Chad, Will Smith.
He's black.
Chad? All right, well, Ronnie, Will Smith.
Oh, you know what? I was surprised that he became the superstar that he is, especially because, you know, you see him in rapping. You know, he was a rapper, and you don't really think a rapper is going to get the opportunities. But the best thing he did, like, he did movies with other fabulous guys. So he didn't have to, like, carry a movie by himself, probably up until Enemy of the State, where it was just him, like, the real top villain, and he didn't have no guy that big, and he proved he could carry a movie by himself. Enemy of the State did pretty good, like, in 98, and that's to me, that's when they didn't worry about the supporting cast. It's with Will Smith and a bunch of pips, and you can sell a movie.
Yeah, and I thought what they did, what my Michael Bay did for the first Bad Boys was just kind of a genius thing to do, you know, because you took the biggest, two of the biggest stars.
Bruckheimer.
Huh?
Bruckheimer, right?
Yeah.
No, Jerry Bruckheimer. Was Jerry Bruckheimer the director of the first Bad Boys?
I think so.
I thought he was the producer of it. I thought Michael Bay directed it. We'll find out.
Oh,
but anyway, I thought that what they did was with it was very, very smart because they took the you know, the biggest, you know, Martin Lawrence was doing Fox, and Martin was a big hit for Fox. The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was a big hit for NBC, and you take those two actors and you put them in the movie together back in 95. I remember that being a big effing deal when I was in high school, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was like, I remember, like, I was like, I have to see this movie. It came out the same day as Friday, too. I remember that. And I remember I saw Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Bad Boys on Friday, and I went and saw Friday on Saturday. And it was just seeing Will Smith and Martin, you kind of knew that both of them were going to have, you know, lengthy film careers. And Martin has done all right in the box office. Of course, Will Smith has definitely surpassed him. But Martin's career has been nothing to sneeze at. But Will Smith, man, the first Bad Boys was directed by Michael Bay, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. So it was just a smart thing what they did with the marketing for Bad Boys and you know, great stuff. Go ahead, Chad. You got anything to say about Will Smith?
I don't know. When the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was going, I definitely saw star potential on Will Smith. I'm not surprised at all his success in Hollywood that he's had. You know, he definitely showed depth within some of the more dramatic episodes of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, especially the one that always comes to mind is his dad episode where, you know, he comes back and he left, and him and his thing they had with Uncle Phil, you know, definitely showed a dramatic side. So I'm not surprised at all that Hollywood kind of latched onto him and, you know, did the thing.
Yeah, I think for me, the moment that I saw that he was a big star is that slow motion running scene, no Brokeback in Bad Boys, where he's kind of like running to save Martin Lawrence's life, and he looked like a complete badass, man. He really did, and it just kind of moved him out the way. And then that movie is the kind of like where it introduced his catchphrase, "Ah hell nah," which he says in every movie now. very, very good stuff from Will Smith. You know, and then you got some other ones too. Woody Harrelson from Cheers. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one that comes to mind, another one immediately, was Robin Williams from Mork and Mindy going on, and then he kind of blew up after that. And then another one that from I've just been watching recently. I mean, he's kind of died off a little bit here towards the end, but from Arrested Development, Michael Cera, he came through there, and he's done Superbad since then. He's done, what's that one, though, for the video game movie, he did that, and he did Juno.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, Scott Pilgrim, but, you know, I haven't seen him in a lot of stuff recently, but he kind of blew up for a little bit a while after that, and I didn't know that stuff, too.
I mean, Jason Bateman was on Arrested Development, and he, you know, he was on the Hogan Family before that, so, you know, he's kind
of
like...
Will Arnett, he's done a lot of stuff after that.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got some stuff, and then also, I have to, you know, I couldn't have a list without talking about... Denzel Washington on St. Elsewhere. That show, I remember watching Denzel Washington on St. Elsewhere. Again, like a lot of you guys, you know, not Ronnie, because me and Ronnie are about the same age, but, you know, a lot of, you know, you younger folks don't, you know, probably don't remember, but I remember watching Denzel Washington on St. Elsewhere. St. Elsewhere was a great show. It had a fabulous cast. A lot of the actors have gone on to do a lot of big things, you know, or they've gone on to do other stuff. Howie Mandel was on there, and he, you know, had a decent career as a stand-up and stuff. Eric Lanuville, he's been, you know, a successful television director. Ed Begley Jr., he's been, you know, a good stock character over the years. Bruce Greenwood, who's been a very, who's gotten a lot of movie roles, the voice of Batman in the Red Hood movie, the Batman in the Red Hood. He's also the voice of Batman on Young Justice is Bruce Greenwood, and he does a lot of movies with Denzel Washington. Like he was in Deja Vu with Denzel, and he was in Flight with Denzel. So it's cool to see that they're still kind of friends with each other. But Denzel Washington, as Dr. Philip, I can't even think of what his name was on the show. It'll come to me. But on St. Elsewhere, I knew that he was going to be Dr. Philip Chandler. That's his name. But I knew he was going to be the breakout star from that show. You know what I'm saying? And it happened like while the show was going on, is when he got the role in Glory. And just, you know, blew up from there, and is, you know, like Will Smith, one of the most powerful men in Hollywood, two-time Oscar winner, just movie after movie after movie, is a hit. Really can't say anything bad about him as far as his acting career. I could say some bad stuff about a couple of his movies, because, you know, even the mighty Denzel Washington does you know, a stinker here and there, but his acting is flawless regardless.
Yeah, and one person that I just came to mind, since you mentioned directors, that is definitely fits this role, has probably had the most successful career outside of TV and also breaks the child star mold, is Ron Howard.
Ron Howard, coming from
the Andy Griffith Show and from Happy Days. And he definitely broke out of that. Not so much on screen, you know. His last big thing was Happy Days, you know, on screen. But he's definitely had, you know, great, great success with, you know, his different films that he's done over the years. But yeah, Ron Howard definitely fits him over.
Yeah. He's done, you know, a lot of good stuff. Cinderella Man, and was Backdraft his movie?
Backdraft. I think so.
Yeah. He's had a ton of great movies. He's with that production team with Brian Grazer. Penny Marshall, who was on Laverne and Shirley, definitely does a lot of directing, and she has that production company too, where just, you know, shoots out a lot of big time movies. Great, great stuff, man, from these people. And then, of course, I think the last person, because of we're all wrestling fans, the last person that we got to talk about is The Rock.
That's Stone Cold?
As good as that, what was that WWE film he did? The one where he's on the reality show.
God, what was the name of that? The Condemned.
The Condemned. Yeah, as good as The Condemned was, we're gonna pick one wrestler to talk about. From, you know, we gotta talk about The Rock. That's funny. we gotta, you know, definitely have to talk about The Rock, man. And this is a guy who, when he first debuted on wrestling, was Rocky Maivia. You know, wore the blue tights. I guess it was the traditional Polynesian shoulder drape or whatever robe or whatever the hell it was. The pineapple hair, real, just kind of like clean cut pretty boy. He gets injured, leaves for a little while, comes back, gives chains of the Disciples of the Apocalypse, the Rock Bottom, kind of takes over Ahmed Johnson's place in the Nation of Domination. Then he usurps Farouk, just completely undermines Farouk the whole time in the Nation, with, you know, whether it be him just adding Mark Henry without his permission, or giving everybody Rolexes and then giving Farouk an autographed picture of The Rock. And what the funny thing is that autographed picture of The Rock would probably be worth more than those Rolexes, you know, in 2013. But, yeah, man, just completely usurped the dude. Then, you know, the corporation, the Rock and Sock connection, Hollywood Rock, I mean, just all the different things he's done. And then to just become this this movie star that he's become is nothing short of amazing. Nothing short of amazing that he's been able to do, you know, go from Rocky Maivia. I mean, if you even want to go back further, Flex Cavana in the USWA, and now he's, you know, one of the most bankable movie stars in Hollywood. Ronnie, what you got to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, those are the type of stuff, you can't write a script for stuff like that. So, you know, because a lot of guys, Hogan was like, well, Jimmy Ventura was probably the first. Then Hogan tried, but those were like moderate to like mediocre success. So you didn't even really thought The Rock. I mean, then once he did that Saturday Night Live, and he probably did like every sketch on the show, he basically, it was, and then that's when you saw his range, like comedic side and everything. He could do a lot of stuff. But that Saturday Night Live was one of the top rated ones they ever had. And,
It got to the point where, like, in late 1998, where people were asking for The Rock. You know, they were like, you know, like, whether it be, like, the producers of Star Trek Voyager or That 70, they wanted this dude on their show. You know, he was, like, so in demand.
For sure, yeah. I mean, the SNL episode he was on was, like Ronnie said, it was a great episode. Because I remember watching that so many times. It was him and musical guest AC/DC, but yeah, he definitely had good ones. My favorite sketch they did was kind of that Superman type of ripoff thing where they're kind of making fun of Superman a little bit.
Yeah,
how,
where
you know,
he's
secret
like
identity.
Disguised, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. But yeah, because that was my breakout moment when I realized The Rock was something bigger than what he is in wrestling, was when it showed his range, like just like Ronnie said, echoing that.
Yeah, definitely. Like they were... Like, you know, that, and then his role in A Scorpion King, was, you know, sprung off of that role in The Mummy Returns. And that wasn't really a big role that he had in Mummy Returns. When you go back and look at it, he maybe had one or two lines and then just kind of, you know, a lot of CGI stuff when he was a scorpion. And then the producers just loved him so much that they made a movie for him, and then, you know, movie role just came after movie role after movie role, and, you know, nobody in wrestling has ever duplicated The Rock.
Didn't he have the highest salary for a first-time, like, star of a movie?
Yeah, like, he was in the Guinness, Guinness Book of World Records for highest-paid salary for a debut and movie star, yeah.
I saw it in an interview a while back. It was around the time The Rock came back in 2011, and it was with The Big Show. And it was like he was telling a story of like how when he had first jumped ship, when he left WCW to go to WWF, and he said that they were going on a trip somewhere overseas, and there was a certain class of superstars that were like in first class seats, and The Rock had invited Show to be on the seat with him, but Show didn't want to go because he felt that he hadn't put enough work in yet. But Show mentioned that The Rock had gotten first class like faster than really anyone ever in the business, because at that point The Rock had only been there for like 4 years or something like that. Because when
he really did move up the ranks fast, because his journey goes, he in 95 he was in USWA doing the Flex Cavana thing, at Survivor Series of 96 is when he debuted on WWE television. By 97, he was Intercontinental Champion. By 98, he was the World Champion. And then the rest is just kind of history. He just kind of really just took off from there. And I just remember, like, during the height of Rock's popularity, everybody, like, this was back in the day when you could wear the wrestling shirts and you didn't look like a complete goof wearing them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like they had the Rock shirts, and then they had the NWO shirts, and that was like, you know, it was something you could wear in public, and it was these guys like the Rock, the NWO, mainly the Rock, I think, but the NWO, because I just remember everybody knew who the Rock was. At that time, it was like it's nothing like, you know, people say that John Cena is a crossover star, but
no,
it's nothing like what the Rock was, man. It's what the Rock is. It's nothing like, if you look at the way Hulk Hogan was in the 80s. There's nothing comparable to that. You know what I'm saying? Because John Cena is there's still a lot of people who don't know who John Cena is, and that's always my argument with the people who say that. I mean, John Cena is the biggest star in WWE, granted, but the Rock's popularity was just
You said it yourself when you were debating with Mr. Knox a while back. That was one of the first radio shows that I listened to you guys, and my thing with John Cena is, I think one of the main points you said was, like, when Hulk Hogan got in his divorce, it was like national news all over TV.
Yeah.
And when John Cena got in divorce, it was like a 30-second clip on TMZ. And
Hulk Hogan,
he's done all types of stuff outside of wrestling. And John Cena, like, every now and then you might see him on Nickelodeon or something, but outside of that, everything else he's done is, like, protected by WWE. So
yeah, exactly. I did bring that up because when Hulk Hogan got a divorce, it was 6 o'clock news everywhere. It was like on all the news stations and stuff.
Yeah,
when John Cena got his divorce,
every week.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's on Larry King every week. Like Linda being on Larry King, and Hogan to get on Larry King.
Yeah, it was like a big news story when John Cena got his divorce. It barely. Like, it was on TMZ and shit like that, but it wasn't on, you know, it didn't make the media rounds that the Hogan story did. And that just, and to me, it's not really even an indictment on Cena, just more of an indictment on where that company is right now.
I think the main reason fans even cared was because of that joke The Rock made, like, a few months before it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know what, I actually agree with that, Toph. I think that, The Rock is, you know, kind of keeping Cena, because I just, like, once we get into the wrestling discussion, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Actually, it's almost time to get into the wrestling discussion, so we'll go to a song and then come back with a little bit of wrestling talk. This is TG Site, 347-637-3859 is the number. This is the BDSR Network.
Mírame a los ojos cuando digas mi nombre. No me confrontes si no eres en tu nombre. Represento mi Boricen, wow. No te me pongas bravo, caerás al fin al cabo. Soy más bravo como el gallo porinqueño haciendo batalla, gritando por la noche como el coqui que no se calla. Corro por el mundo, mi corazón lleno de candela. Entro mis batallas cargando mi bandera. Puertorriqueña, misteriosa como las aguas azules, fuerte como las montañas que cortan por las nubes. Pues manos pa' arriba, manos pa' arriba. Soy de Puerto Rico, como ella no es más rica. Duro como la roca, porque si yo soy boricua.
Mírame los ojos cuando digas mi nombre. No me conoces si no eres tu nombre.
Viajo por el mundo, represento tantas veces. Jalando boricuas, nuestro army crece y crece.
Mírame los ojos cuando digas mi nombre. No me conoces si no eres tu nombre.
Viajo por el mundo, represento tantas veces. Ojos traigo guerra, represento los soldados que murieron por mi tierra. No traigas la bulla si no quiere boca rota.
Boricua de la casa,
garantizan tu derrota. Te esperaba una cosa, todo el mundo ven para aquí. Enemigos caerán for the 1, 2, 3. Si no aguanta el calor, pues no entre a mi fuego. Que te quito el machismo, sufrirá ya y te dejo. Manos pa' arriba,
hands up high,
manos pa' arriba.
All right, welcome back to TV side. This is your host, Kay and Lee. Before we left for the song Los Boricuas, we were talking about The Rock and, you know, his rise from wrestling to what he is today. And it just kind of spilled over into wrestling talk. And we're going to move back into that. But before we do that, Chad, can you share the video game news of the week?
Yeah, sure. I got a couple different things here. Let me see. We got some video game charts here, courtesy of VGCharts.com. But one of the things here that I like to highlight, just kind of a look to the future here, on for what we got here for pre-orders. You know, the games are coming down the pipeline. The top 10, we have BioShock Infinite, which released this week, also with Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon on the 3DS, that also released this week. So those two are in the top. Followed by that, a strong person who I think we're going to see a lot of positive reviews. In the 3 and 4 spot, we got Grand Theft Auto 5 on the 3 spot on the Xbox 360, the 4 spot on the PS3, and then we got The Last of Us on PS3, Animal Crossing, A New Leaf, which I'm surprised that's got so many pre-orders on that, because I know it's kind of a popular title on for the DS, but I didn't think it was that popular, so that's at the number 7. Let me see, followed by that, we got a bunch of different copy ones, you know, just different ones like BioShock Infinite's on there again for the PC. But we got Injustice Gods Among Us in the 9th slot, which I know a lot of us... especially in the TG site world, are hyped for that one to come out. Kind of a Mortal Kombat game with the DC Nation in there, which I think will be good. Number 10, we got Dead Island Riptide. And then some of the other ones, we got a couple of Tom Clancy games, Rainbow Six, and then Splinter Cell. But this year, like I said last week, I think we're definitely seeing a strong coming out of video games in this year, because last year was kind of so-so. But this year, we got definitely a lot of heavy hitters coming out right now. But another thing I want to get into is video games that came out this week, what you can look for out on the shelves if you're looking for a new game. BioShock Infinite, like I mentioned before, came out for the PC 360 and PS3. Reviews for it are tremendous right now, so definitely a game you want to check out if you're a fan of the BioShock series or just the first-person shooter type element. It's definitely a game worth your while. Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, that's on the 3DS. I heard great reviews on that as well. Just rounding it out, we got Army of Two, The Devil's Cartel. Kind of a hit or miss series, Army of Two's been. Some people are fans of it, some people don't like it. But that's out on the 360 and PS3. For sports game, we got Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14, that came out for the 360 and PS3. Final Fantasy XI, The Ultimate Election, that came out for the 360. And finally, a game that I know Toph is a fan of. Well, I don't know if he's a fan of this game, but I know he's a fan of what's coming. We got Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Gates to Infinity, came out for the 3DS. But that's what's coming out this week. And, back to you, Cammy.
All right, thank you for that, Chad. We still need to talk about Wolverine, but we'll do that, I guess, later. But before we left, we were talking about The Rock and just his star power. And, you hit on a couple of things, Toph, especially with that divorce news, because, like, and you too, Ronnie, I remember that when Hogan got a divorce, it was on every single news outlet on the planet. And Cena's divorce was just as nasty as Hogan's, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't a friendly divorce by any means. I guess there were no kids involved, so it didn't make it as bitter, but still not a smooth divorce. And it really was a kind of a blip on the radar. And that's, you know, I just don't think people like understand the magnitude of what, you know, these guys were back in the day. You know, your Rocks and your Hogans, and stuff like that, you know, like these real legit crossover stars. Like even, like if you go back to the 80s and stuff, like all of those stars from the 80s are people today still know who they are, you know what I'm saying? Like you could go up to a random old person on the street, they're going to know who Coco Beware is, you know, and you just don't have that same effect with these guys today. And it, like I said, I don't think it's so much an indictment on, you know, guys like Cena and stuff, but it's more an indictment on the company. Because as much as bad as, even when Hogan was getting booed in WCW, although his boos were never as bad as John Cena's, the Hogan was never force-fed, so to speak, you know. It was more, I think the fans, like, took to Hogan a little bit, but Cena's been force-fed a lot, you know, and I think that has a lot to do with, you know, some of the fans' resentment towards him. And, you know, he sells a lot of merchandise. I mean, the kids absolutely love Cena, you know. If you see a kid, and I've seen groups and groups of kids where they have the hat, the shirt, the wristbands, and, you know, some goofy jean shorts. You know, the whole ensemble that probably costs about $80, $90, you know, and a bunch of, you know, parents are buying this crap for the kids. I mean, it does mean something. Don't get me wrong, but, I mean, like, it really is nothing when you look at what Hulk Hogan and The Rock and even Stone Cold and these guys did. It's really, really small potatoes. Not even comparable in my opinion. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the way WrestleMania is shaping up. I think it's shaping up quite crappy, to be honest with you. I'm interested in a few matches, but I want to talk about the main event, and that's The Rock and Cena, because they finally were able to do something with it this past Monday. Honestly, I do like the direction they're going with John Cena and The Rock. I always thought it was ignorant for them to have Cena out there trying to cut promos that were on par with The Rock. You know, basically have him one-up The Rock or try to get fans behind him. Because to me, it was never going to happen, you know. It's just something that, The Rock is an icon at this point in his career. He's going to get the respect chairs wherever he goes. He's kind of like on that Flair, Shawn Michaels, Hulk Hogan level where he's going to get cheered, you know. I remember Philly booing The Rock back in 2010 when he was on his way out. This past Monday, he, you know, was definitely the most over person in the crowd. And I just think that it was always, was never a fan of them trying to make Cena try to get to that level. I thought it was unfair to Cena, actually. I think now that Cena, he's not so much a heel in the traditional sense of the word, but he's a heel as far as for this feud with The Rock. He's not trying to be a face, if that makes any sense. Chad, he's not trying to outshine what The Rock is doing, which I think is a smarter way to play this, you know.
Yeah, definitely agree with that, because I think that WWE is smart enough to know, to go into that New York market. They're in New Jersey, but you know what I'm saying, right? And that same thing that John Cena is definitely not going to be getting cheers. So for him to kind of work this underlying, you know, kind of heel route, but not really heel, because let's be honest, John Cena is not going to be a heel anytime soon, because he's the top market growing thing, and he's the one that's for the kids right now. Until they can get somebody that is going to appeal to the kids and be a good strong face, John Cena is not going anywhere in the heel route. But it's definitely smart what they're doing. It builds to their match a little bit more when you got kind of that little heel aspect going towards it. But I definitely agree that it's good what they're doing, and this segment that they did on Monday Night Raw with the Legends panel, it adds to the match, because a lot of us weren't certain what we're going to see, because we haven't seen either of them in the past 2 weeks on TV. But when you go into it and you look at the segment for what it is, it definitely added a lot of mystique to the match, and like a lot of stuff, you know, people want to see it more, because before we had no interest in it, but this one, it kind of tied up some loose ends where John Cena said he respected The Rock and then The Rock kind of fired back on him. But I like what they're doing so far with this build-up, because before, last week, I had absolutely no interest, but now I do have a bit of interest in seeing how this match plays out.
Yeah, I'm interested in it from the standpoint of I do want to see how they're going to book the match. The match itself, I can't say I'm interested, but I can't say that I'm not interested. You know what I'm saying? I definitely want to see how this match is booked. I want to see where they're going to go, especially since they do have The Rock after WrestleMania. That adds another layer to the story. So I want to see where they're going to go with that. John Cena, I think he's we all say this. He's always better when he's playing a more serious part. What I said on Monday. What I liked about him this week is I like how he started off the promo being like, I respect The Rock and this and that, to just kind of playing up that heel aspect of I beat myself and not really taking responsibility for or not accepting that The Rock beat him, you know. And I thought that's kind of what this feud needed, was Cena to be the bitter guy who's making excuses for, instead of accepting the loss like a man, so to speak. Where do you think they go with this, Toph?
Well, have you guys read the SmackDown spoilers this week?
Yeah, I did read spoilers. Yeah.
Oh well, how do you guys feel about Johnny Ace coming back?
Spoiler alert. For all those that are listening, if you don't want to hear what's going to happen on SmackDown, pause for the next 5 minutes or so. Johnny Ace did come back on SmackDown to confront The Rock, and I think he ate a rock bottom on SmackDown, according to the spoilers. That does actually add another layer to that feud. I will say that. When I read it,
the first thing I thought about was Mania X7. I'm not saying Cena's going to sell his soul or nothing, but you got Johnny Ace and John Cena, two guys that have mutual dislike for The Rock. I could definitely see like a one-night deal thing, you know.
This is a thing to me that I kind of think that is getting lost on a lot of, you know, smart wrestling fans who know better, who think that Cena won't turn heel. I don't think it's that big of a deal if Cena turns heel right now, because they do have guys in that company that are like The Rock. The Rock is just as easily for the kids as Cena. You know what I'm saying? This is what happens if Cena turns heel. This is exactly what happens if Cena turns heel. So stop being a face for the kids and start being a face for, you know, all the marks who hate him right now. You know what I'm saying? That's always what happens when this kind of thing happens. You know what I'm saying? That's where Cena will find himself. And I think that's one of the reasons why they never turn him, because they know that he's still going to get the mixed reaction regardless. I think if they turn him heel, and they start making some C Nation World Order shirts, you know, fans will buy them. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's as risque as a lot of us might think it is. You know, I'm not saying that's what they're gonna do, but I don't think it's as big of an issue as we sometimes make it out to be. You know, I think.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't see them turning. A lot of people after Monday Night Raw think, see, you know, that they're gonna turn Cena heel at WrestleMania. I don't see that happening, just because there's no real strong babyface. If he turns heel, yeah, sure. I know a lot of people probably like that. They want that over this year, but I just don't see any strong babyface to go against that. They don't have anyone to fill that role that John Cena was. I mean, they kind of had it with Punk, but I mean, some of the.
I want to talk about that briefly, Chad.
What's that?
I want to talk about that briefly, Chad.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, you know, when NWO, when Hogan formed the NWO, and when he went heel, everyone remembers that it was Crow Sting, the one that ultimately became the savior and the top babyface that feud with Hogan and the NWO. That's what history remembers, and that's what history tells us. But what many fans forget was it wasn't Sting immediately that became the top face. Hogan went through a lot of roadblocks first on his way there. You know, Luger was kind of like that annoying bug that wouldn't go away. Then it was Savage. Then it was Piper, the Steiner brothers, Harlem Heat, Luger again. And after about 4 to 5 months of this, then it was Sting. So they didn't immediately create a top babyface. After Hogan went heel, WCW just kind of had a roster of top upper mid-card babyfaces, but there wasn't really a top face. And after about half a year, then it was Sting. So if we're going to take WWE into account, they don't immediately have to just, you know, say, okay, Cena's heel, we got to make a top face like tomorrow. You know, I think that over a period of 4 to 5 months, they could create one.
I think they could do it over the course of a year. To be honest with you, WWE is in decent shape right now. They don't. I'm with you on this one, Toph. I don't know how they see it. I kind of think they see things the way Chad just said, the way that we all kind of know. But they, if they wanted to, they really could do that, man. They could waste a year trying to figure out who the next. And this nonsense about Randy Orton being the leader of the Shield, I think John Cena being the leader of the Shield would be much, much better, you know?
Well, see, the thing is, if you want to do a comparison of the WCW thing, which, I agree the WCW way, you know, was fine when you had Luger and all that, but, you know, if you're going to kind of go that way, who's Cena going to fight? I mean, what other top faces are on that?
You could fight, like, Ryback and Del Rio and dorks like that. I mean, if, you know.
Well, you know,
but
Punk's going to be face again eventually.
I don't think, like, anytime soon, though. I think that they're riding high on the Punk heel thing because that's probably the top heel in the company they have going on right now.
Oh, what about Brian?
Brian's kind
I don't know
of,
what the hell Brian is.
Yeah, Brian's kind of a winner because he's getting a face reaction.
Yeah, I think he's more of a face because even when they have him wrestle on Saturday morning Slam and on the main event, he does wrestle as a face. They never have him fighting heels on the show. He's always fighting faces. So, I think if they wanted to do it, I don't think they're in as bad. I mean, look, they don't have any faces in that company. John Cena isn't even a good face. If you want to be completely honest, I mean, yeah, he sells a couple shirts and that kind of thing. But I mean, in the grand scheme of things, John Cena is really no different than, you know, these other guys that do nothing. I guess his TV numbers are slightly up, but not even that much up, because when he's having to carry the show by himself, their ratings are a 2.5. When Rock and Lesnar are on the show, the ratings are a 3.0. So I mean, I think Cena is Cena, and I think he deserves a lot of credit. But I mean, I think that, you know, they if they wanted to experiment after WrestleMania, especially going into 30, especially if they're going to have Rock and Lesnar be the main event for WrestleMania 30, now is the best time for them to experiment with that kind of thing. You know,
that's always been my beef with WWE, probably like post WCW, is like they don't got no competition. So I don't experiment with something like give a nigga a belt for once, goddammit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. It's like it
was a stick, you know, because, you know what I mean, ratings isn't going to change. It's going to be a 2.8 to a 3.0 to a 3.0. Either way, it's not going to go higher than that. So you might as well experiment and see what can they do to change it up, because you never know.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, you know, when WCW and ECW folded, they came up with the brand concept, which was a great idea at the time, because you had this big influx of talent from WCW, ECW. You had all the WWF guys and all the guys that were in developmental coming up. So by separating the brands, it still gave off that vibe, like that there were two different shows. Because if you watch SmackDown, like in 02, 03, 04, and arguably around 05 to late 06, it did kind of have that WCW, ECW vibe, but still had that WWF era-ish thing. But around 2007, 2008, they just kind of stopped caring about the brands, and it didn't really matter anymore. So, you know, without competition, they don't really have a reason to experiment, as you guys would say.
Yeah,
so.
That's exactly the problem, is they are comfortable and complacent in the spot they're in, so they're not going to experiment with anything, you know what I'm saying? They kind of have that – it's kind of like the stuff that as a – like working in public administration for a community college, you get that complacency. You get this kind of – this idea where if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think WWE right now is really in that mindset that I think that they – between now and WrestleMania 30, I think they have to get out of that. You know, I don't know what needs to happen with John Cena. I don't necessarily think he needs to turn heel, but I think I don't see anything wrong with him turning heel. You know, like I said, because all it's gonna do is flip him from, you know, one group of fans. Because the internet marks that hate him now, they'll start cheering for him. It'll be just like the NWO thing all over again. If they put him with the Shield and put him in some black shit, you know, it's done, you know. You put Randy Orton with the Shield, those guys turn into legacy.
You're right.
It's not going to do anything for those dudes. They turn into legacy. What's his name? Roman Reigns turns into Manu. He'll be released. He'll be released like in 2 or 3 months. The other dorks turn into Rhodes and DiBiase. they become nobodies. They'll fight him in a fatal four-way at WrestleMania 30. Orton will win, and then one of them will go. They'll go into either a goofy ass tag team, or one of them will get the $1 million belt. Randy Orton is not good for that type of thing. His track record has proven he can't. That people do not become star standing next to him. I think Cena is a much, first I think they should leave the Shield alone and don't put anybody with them, but if they're going to put somebody with them that's a face, I definitely think Cena would be the better guy. And also, storyline-wise, it would make more sense than Orton, too, because Cena's only gotten, like, one beatdown from the Shield, I think, and it wasn't even that bad of a beatdown, you know? Orton has gotten like at least 3 or 4 beatdowns from the Shield,
and their whole gimmick is about injustice and whatnot. So,
yeah,
they would kind of fit Cena more right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, because he could be like, you know, The Rock. He could easily do that thing where he says, you know, I've given to you guys, you know, time and time again, and you guys turn on me and cheer for The Rock. It's a storyline that writes itself, you know. It's something that could easily be done without a lot of trying and a lot of, you know, trying to, you know, play connect the dots and stuff like that.
Yep.
I think Orton needs to get released. That's personally my...
Yeah, because they're not going to get behind Orton at all. I mean, in a recent interview, Chris Jericho on MLW Radio, he just said that he thinks the reason that they're not behind Orton is because he has 2 strikes already. And, you know, he's kind of that wild card there where he could take off, but it takes, if they're going to follow a wellness policy, it takes one thing for him just to kind of get released and get fired from the company.
Yeah, he's a 3 striker that realistically he has like 4 or 5 strikes, you know, and they kind of brushed a couple of them under the rug. Like, I know with that online drug thing, what was that scandal called again? The one that Booker T left, and, you know, Batista was involved in it and he didn't get suspended, and Orton, the signature pharmacy scandal. Orton didn't get suspended for that, and he was on the name. He was on that list, and he didn't get suspended. And then there was another thing that happened after that. That would have been his 3rd strike right there. And
my thing with Orton – oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
My thing with Orton is he's gone as far as he can go in WWE. He's reached his limit. You know, like, my thing against young world champions is, like, when you become a champion at such a young age – I mean, it's great at the time, at your youth when you first come in, but ultimately it hurts you because when you become the youngest champion of your era, you can't really top that. Randy Orton is a 9-time world champion, and I swear to God, for the life of me, I can only remember 2 of his reigns. Every attempt they've had to push him as a babyface was flopped, either by bad booking or just bad timing. You know, Triple H just made sure both times when Randy Orton could have been the top guy in the company, Triple H kind of botched that on both occasions. They decided to focus SmackDown on him at the wrong time when Edge literally passed the torch to Christian, and they just kind of booked him like a monster. They booked him like a heel when he was a face, and there's just really nowhere for him to go. I think that Randy Orton should kind of just do what Jeff Hardy did, just go elsewhere, kind of revitalize your character, and maybe come back later. But yeah, I definitely agree with Orton. They should just let him go.
Yeah, I think Orton is definitely like Orton is not a person that's like a guy like CM Punk has reinvented himself like 7 or 8 times, and Daniel Bryan has reinvented himself like 4 or 5 times since he's been in that company. And Randy Orton, I think he's reinvented himself 1 time, you know, because he was a happy-go-lucky dude when he first got there, and then he's this viper cat now. But that's all he's been, you know what I'm saying? He's never been anything else. I mean, he's not a guy who could evolve with the times, and these people who are clamoring for a Randy Orton face turn, my question to you guys would be, what will Randy Orton do as a heel
that he hasn't done already?
Yeah, that is any different than anything he's done. You know what I'm saying? If he turns into a heel, it's the same. It's basically 2009 all over again. You know,
without the punt.
Yeah, without the punt.
Yeah,
I mean,
without the punt. Yeah.
Nobody got billed as with Randy Orton as a heel. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was feuding with Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston was relevant for like 6 weeks and then became irrelevant again. The guys that were partnering with him, you know, became nothing. And, you know, we crack on Triple H all the time on this show, but, I mean, Evolution did produce Orton and Batista, you know. If you can't say anything else about Evolution, you can say it produced Orton and Batista, you know. And Orton just hasn't done that, man. He's not a guy who star power rubs off on anybody else, you know?
It all started at WrestleMania 25.
Well, the problem is, too, Orton, he didn't have the luxury like Triple H did with Mick Foley to put him over. Well, they tried it in 04, but I think Foley was like past his prime. Nobody took it seriously how when Foley did with Triple H back in 2000, or 99, 2000.
Right,
and
yeah.
That's probably his problem. He wasn't next to nobody that drew money to make him look good, and eventually people would kind of he would have that stigma stuck with him, kind of Triple H did. He hung around with The Rock and Stone Cold and Reagan Foley and Taker, you know, that kind of that margin kind of stuck with him, and or it didn't have that guy that knows to constantly put him over, and they tried it with guys kind of past their prime with Foley and Shawn Michaels and stuff like that. And I think it just didn't work with him. Plus he sucks anyway. He's a douchebag.
I think one thing that kind of hurt Orton was, you know, one of his top feuds so far in his tenure was his feud with John Cena. And as much as they faced off, they never had a match at WrestleMania. And I know some people are going to be like, well, that's not really that big of a deal. But when you really think about it, it is.
No, that
could
have happened.
Yeah.
Because
some of the best feuds.
Yeah, they did the three-way. The one thing you're right about that, because those dudes came up at the same time, and WWE did a very good job of keeping them apart for years, you know. And then they got to a point where the first time they wrestled, it was kind of special, but then they made them wrestle each other again like 75 times after that, you know, where the first time that those dudes should have ever locked horns was WrestleMania. I'll co-sign on that, Tuff, definitely.
Yeah.
And it just kind of put Orton in this spot now where he's just kind of in limbo, because Cena is like, you could say Cena hasn't reinvented himself, but Cena
he can when he has to.
Yeah, he has an intangible that Orton just doesn't have, you know. I can't even describe it because there was a time where I thought Orton could be – I really did think Orton could rival Cena at one point. But Cena does have an intangible that Orton just does not have that's missing from Orton. Like, it's something I can't really put my finger on with Cena, but, you know – I'm more intrigued when Cena's on television than I am when Orton is on TV, and that's just a fact. Like anytime Orton grabs a microphone, I almost get that Triple H thing when Triple H grabs a mic, because I hate Triple H promos. I even if it's a 5-minute promo, I think it's always 4 minutes too long. I can't stand Triple H on the mic. And Orton is kind of like that, too. You know, I just...
Cena puts more people over, too.
Yeah. I think so. Even though Cena makes a joke out of everything, I do think that there's some truth to that. I do think that he puts more people over. And I think Orton is a crybaby, too, you know, just like with the whole Kofi Kingston thing, you know, where he's, yelling stupid in the middle of a match and just stuff like that. And
nobody ever talks about that time he cursed out R-Truth.
No, when did he do that? Probably because R-Truth defended himself and probably, you know.
It happened to Raw after that really bad pay-per-view that got dropped.
Yeah.
I think it was called Capital Punishment.
Okay,
it was a six-man tag. It was like Alex Riley, Cena, and Orton against Christian, Miz, and Truth. And like there was a spot in the match where Truth was supposed to go for a tag, but there was some type of miscommunication error between Truth and Miz, and so Truth wasn't able to get the tag, and Orton, he kind of got off the ring apron, he kicked the stairs and was like, son of a, he just screamed it really loud, and
R-Truth probably got in his grill backstage. Like Kofi Kingston is a guy, you know, I like Kofi Kingston, but he's got that happy-go-lucky thing going with for him, and I kind of think that's how he is in real life. You know, he's a college boy, college graduate, from the suburbs of Massachusetts. R-Truth is from the streets, so, you know, with him yelling at Kofi Kingston, I think us internet fans are going to be more sympathetic towards something like that because, you know, it's like, how can you yell at a guy like Kofi Kingston? You know, it's almost like, you know, kind of like how Duckman used to take those two teddy bears and put them in the blender and crap like that. But with R-Truth, I just think R-Truth is definitely a little bit more street than, you know, Kofi, and I think he probably handled it. You know, that's probably why it's not a big deal. That's probably why it didn't make a whole lot of news, because R-Truth probably handled it in kind. You know, just like when Orton got on that television show and buried Mark Henry. I mean, Mark Henry handled that, you know, so, I mean... It's, you know, Orton is definitely, you know, a guy who's going to pick and choose who he's going to want it with, you know what I'm saying? I think Kofi Kingston is an easy target, so he's going to probably get this. And I don't know Kofi Kingston personally, so I don't know if Kofi Kingston is going to be the kind of guy to get in his grill like he should, you know? Whereas with somebody like an MVP or R-Truth, I could totally see, you know, them getting in Orton's grill after something like that happening, you know?
To end it on Orton, like, I just want to say that I'm not really a fan of Mr. Anderson / Mr. Kennedy. He's okay. I know he has his following, but, like, I never really cared for him. He's not my cup of tea. However, I will say I don't care what Orton says. I do think that he purposely got him fired. That's just me, though.
Oh, yeah. I think that that's kind of the conclusion that most of the internet draws, because there was a lot of backstage. Kennedy he was already not liked for some of the stuff he said on Fox News and things of that nature. He did make a lot of stupid decisions, but I mean, he didn't injure anybody, and I think Orton pulled a snitch move on him. And that was about it. We do kind of need to move on from this talk of Orton. What about this CM Punk and Undertaker stuff that's going on? Chad, you got an opinion on it?
I mean, I think it's it's good so far what they've done with the Paul Bearer stuff that they've kind of infused into the angle, because otherwise I'm not sure what they would be going on. But I've been entertained by that. Punk is always good on the mic. He's going to carry that. And I did like the stuff on Raw with Undertaker pinging out of nowhere and just, you know, in typical Undertaker fashion and just kind of beating down that Punk. It's one of those matches. It's probably the other than the Cena Rock, to just kind of see how that plays out. It's definitely the reason why I want to watch Mania, is to see kind of what goes on with the Punk and Undertaker thing. I like what they're doing. It's one of the definitely the strongest angle coming out of Raw we can pinpoint on, because it's that and then the Cena and Rock thing. But I like what they're doing. I'll definitely be interested to see how this match plays out. I mean, we already know the outcome of what's going on here. I'll be definitely surprised if they're going to pass the torch, but let's be honest, it's not going to happen. But yeah, I like what they're doing.
Yeah, I like what they're doing. I can say that I like what they're doing, but I do think that they're kind of like, I do think that they could do a better job. I don't want to sound like one of those crazy, ridiculous Punk fans on the internet that, you know, always think Punk is getting screwed at every turn. I do think they could do a better job of making Punk look a little bit more credible.
He's goofy right now.
Yeah, that's what it is to me. I think Punk is doing a good job with the promos and stuff, but the problem that I have with this is I still think the Undertaker is going to slaughter him at WrestleMania, and I don't think that should be the attitude that I have going into that match. You know, Undertaker is going to destroy him.
Yeah, one thing that I think they could do a lot better, you know, adding to the Punk character, is previously that he was, what, known for the pipe bomb type promos. But once he got into that program with Undertaker, it's all about, you know, the streak and like that. But, I mean, if they wanted to make the Punk character seriously, they could definitely type, you know, drop some of those pipe bomb promos that he does. Like, you know, he can obviously do the one where, you know, Taker, he only competes one time a year at WrestleMania. You know, just stuff like that, just different type of promos against the Undertaker. But they definitely held it back some a little bit when it comes to the Undertaker, and which I can understand because he's a respectable guy and, you know, the locker room leader. But they definitely could make Punk's character more edgy than just, you know, going after the streak. They could add another element to that that makes us more interested in the angle.
Well, and he's also kind of doing this thing where he's like punking out a lot. It's just like, I think that's my biggest issue with it, is kind of like Ronnie said, there's this air of goofiness to it. It's like I just don't see this guy as a dude that belongs in the ring. Just based on, it's not based on his past accolades. I think on his past accolades, he's more than deserving of a feud with Undertaker. But just based on the way this has been booked, in spite of the strong promos and stuff, I kind of think that, you know, this, especially from this past Monday, he cut an epic promo, of course. But then, you know, towards the latter parts of that promo, it start crossing the lines of epic to goofy a little bit, you know, to kind of like, I just don't see Undertaker losing to this guy. And I think, and for me, it's important for me to go into that match thinking that there's a chance that Undertaker will lose, because I'm one of those people that don't think Undertaker's ever going to lose, you know. But if you could just get me to kind of buy into the fact that there's an off chance that Punk can beat him, I think that would be enough. And I just don't have that going on right now. What about you, Toph?
I'm not really feeling the angle for a few reasons. For the first reason, from like a kayfabe point of view, CM Punk just kind of seems like a loser. I mean, he gets beaten by The Rock twice, then he gets beat by John Cena, and now you're challenging The Undertaker. So it's like, if you can't beat those two, how are you supposed to beat The Undertaker by yourself? Secondly, this build-up is making me wonder, you know, I'm sorry that Paul Moody, a.k.a. Paul Bearer, passed away, but it's making me think, if this guy never passed away, how would they have built this? Because the entire feud.
I am concerned about that. Now, we talked about that. That's why I didn't mention it a second ago, because we talked about it on the show Monday. I totally feel that way. I was like, you know, if Paul Bearer didn't die, you know, what would these guys be doing? Like, how would this feud be going? as far as that's concerned. The loss to the Rock and Punk really don't bother me. To the Rock and Cena really don't bother me that much. If they were like a Jericho, like, because the way Jericho loses, if it would have been something like that, it would have bothered me a little bit more. I have more of a problem with what you just said though. If Paul Bearer didn't die, like what was the plan? You know, it almost has me thinking. Where were WWE executives when Paul Bearer passed away? That's the mark in me talking.
Yeah, but the feud seems to be very one-sided. Punk doing all the promos, and Taker's barely said anything at all. I think he's cut, like, one promo, and that was for Punk to return to earn. And in retrospect, when I look back, I think the best thing they could have done was they could have just had Punk be the champion. That way it could have been his streak versus the streak, and I think the believability of that would have made the match better. But, you know, that's just me.
No, I think ideally in a perfect world, that kind of would have been the direction they would have went. But the problem with that was once you say The Rock is winning a title and promoted for that long, that's the only option you have. You have to stay kind of par of the course for that. But I definitely agree with that summation that, you know, if he had a streak to go against Undertaker's streak, it would definitely add another element to the match. And also, I do think there is a point with Undertaker not cutting promos, because he cut promos during both of his feuds with Triple H and Shawn Michaels, and it kind of almost makes me think that, you know, it almost kind of gives the impression that Undertaker just, you know, maybe to the average fan, that Undertaker doesn't take Punk seriously, you know?
Yeah, you know, I feel like he's just winging it, because no matter how you look at it, they just had 4 weeks to build this. And that's and, you know, 4 weeks, that's a huge step down when you compare it to all his other feuds. And taking Shawn Michaels and Triple H out of it, you know, for the past, you know, 7 to 8 years, when Taker goes into WrestleMania, his feuds are usually getting at least 2 months minimum worth of build. And this year it's just 4 weeks.
And he does cut promos too. No one can say that he doesn't. If you go back and watch his last, you know, 6 or 7 WrestleManias, he's cut promos during every single one of those feuds. And this Punk one, he hasn't cut any promos. So that to me is kind of like an issue. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to go to one more song, and then when I get back, we're going to close up, where we'll talk a little bit more about WrestleMania, get on this Jack Swagger thing. And then talk a little bit about Wolverine, and then close out the show. So this is TG Site on the BDSIR network.
No.
Undertaker at WrestleMania, do you think that the Punk fans online would still find, you know, stuff to complain about, you know, him being held back and this, that, and the other?
Do Punk fans have a right to stand like that or no? Definitely not, because the streak is definitely something, you know, it's been built up for God knows what, 20 years now. If he beats the streak, what else can the guy do? I mean, it's more prestigious, let's be honest, than the title, and it's more prestigious than any other thing going to the company, so they have no real reason to complain and bitch about that. Because
I don't think they have a reason to complain now. I think these cats will find a reason to say Punk is getting screwed or whatever. But anyway, welcome back to TG Side. We're gonna close up here soon. I did want to talk a little bit about. I'll let you guys choose the match, because I'm not talking about all these matches. We'll either talk about Fandango and Jericho, Mark Henry and Ryback, or Swagger and Coulter, and you know, we'll vote on it, I guess. I really don't care which one we talk about. So, Chad, do you want to take a stab? Which one would you want to talk about out of those three?
God, making me choose. You know what? For whatever, we'll talk about Jericho and Fandango. We'll talk about that.
Okay. Do you have a problem with that, Toph?
No, I'm cool. We can talk about that.
Okay. To me, this match right here, this Jericho-Fandango, I really think Jericho should win, and I really do think it needs to be like a 7-minute squash. I know people might have disagreed. I hear a lot of internet fans saying that Fandango will win, and knowing Jericho, that might be true, but I see no reason for him to win. That's just my opinion. Chad, this is your topic. What do you think?
To me, I don't know. To me, it's just kind of lazy booking. Just the way they kind of slap them.
It's beyond lazy.
Yeah, just kind of slap them together. I mean, Fandango has only been around for, a month, maybe more in that character. I know he did the Johnny Curtis thing.
Yeah, we're just counting the Fandango stuff, but
just to count that, it doesn't really make any sense for just this type of feud to go on. They tried to make a reason for it where, you know, where Jericho said everybody's gunning to the top, but I don't know. I just don't see it. Why? It's just a horrible use of Chris Jericho, in my opinion, and his way back. But and that's the reason why I want to think that maybe they're trying to put him over, and why I think that Fandango is going to win. Because if they're bringing him back for this specific thing, I mean, having Jericho go over, it really doesn't do much to the product, because Jericho, I don't know how much longer he's going to stay after. And Fandango, this character is supposed to be in for the long run, and, you know, just coming into WWE, it makes more sense for Fandango to go over, even though we may not like the character, but just in the WWE mind, you know,
I mean,
he's going to be in for the long run.
I'll point to Exhibit A to you guys, to both of you guys, and you go ahead and get your say in this, Toph. This is the same company that booked short-term contract Ultimate Warrior to beat Triple H in like 45 seconds at WrestleMania 12. You know, and that was really all Ultimate Warrior came back for. He did nothing else after that. So it's not that outrageous for you know, them to bring back a star to just, you know, make some dude job out. Go ahead, Toph.
Either way you look at it, I mean, this is crazy. This is like, this guy's debuting at WrestleMania, for God's sake. I mean, that paycheck alone. I mean, good grief. I mean, has anyone ever thought about that?
I mean, I've thought about it a lot.
To capitalize on what Colt's saying, I mean, if we can think throughout the past, what guys have debuted at WrestleMania? I don't know.
I mean, they've had, like, you know, debuts, like, not really so much in matches, but they've had, like, you know, Mark Merrill's debut is at WrestleMania. What's his name? Ken Shamrock's debut is at WrestleMania. So, I mean, they've had, like, you know, stuff like that. This guy is debuting in a match at WrestleMania, and I guess, to me, I don't, like, it, like, say it's not even, like, a squash match that Jericho wins. Say it's a hard-fought match that Jericho wins by, like, a roll-up pinfall. Even that, I think, wouldn't hurt Fandango necessarily. You know what
I'm
saying?
It's going to be his first match anyway, so, yeah, it's about WrestleMania. The way I see this match going, I think it's going to be either, like, we're either going to get, like, a Kane, Chavo, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan-like squash where Jericho's just going to just destroy him, like, the first 30 seconds, or it's going to be, like, a decent match that goes maybe 5 or 6 minutes or so. Yeah, I respect Jericho, and I like the fact that, you know, he likes to put over guys over, and he acknowledges the fact that his time is over. But my thing is not against Jericho. It's against the WWE. They're just booking Jericho to lose for the sake of just putting guys over, and that's all well and good. But, like, if you don't do it in meaningful ways, it's really not helping anybody. And that's kind of...
Yeah, no, you're right. Go ahead and finish your thought, Toph, because you're right. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's just my beef with Jericho, like, ever since his return last year. Like, his, you know, he still looks great in the ring. He's still in good shape. He's putting on great matches, but there's no build or meaning in these matches. He's just jobbing for the sake of jobbing, and it's not really meaning anything in the long run.
And that's my beef with Jericho, too, because Jericho is the one main eventer in that company who will lose to anybody they tell him to lose to. And over the years, this guy, they have devalued what a win over Jericho is supposed to mean, you know. Like, I remember back in the day, this dude put over Shelton Benjamin, you know what I'm saying? He put him over, you know, clearly. And, you know, they did nothing with Shelton Benjamin afterwards. He did the same thing with Kofi Kingston. They did nothing with Kofi Kingston.
Remember when he put over Evan?
Huh?
Remember when he put over Bourne? That went nowhere, too.
Yeah, he did it with Evan Bourne. He did it with JTG, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, you guys are having this dude lose to people, and you're not pushing these people that he's losing to. So if I was Jericho, I'd be real strict about that. I'd be like, look, man, if you guys are going to keep having me job to people, at least do something that's with the people you're having me job to. You know what I'm saying? Don't keep having me job to these guys that you have no faith in. You know, Jericho's one of those dudes. He knows that he knows his talent, and he knows his spot is never going anywhere. He knows he could come and go as he pleases, and he's got it like that. Like you said, I got nothing but respect for him on that front. I mean, this is a dude who at 40 years old, I can't believe how crisp he is in the ring. Even when he was getting on my nerves last year, I really wasn't paying much attention to his wrestling just because I thought his character was so annoying, but you know, watching him come back this year and like that, he had this one three-way match the other day that he literally carried the hell out of. I think it was against, Miz
and Barrett.
Man, he carried those dudes. It was like, and you could tell it was all him, you know. You could tell it was like this 40-year-old man is just, you know, making these two young dudes look like $1 trillion right now. So I got nothing but respect for Jericho and how he gets down in that ring. Definitely we got to pay attention to that Fandango match because It'll definitely say something about where they see Fandango in the grand scheme of things, whether he's going to be a player or not.
Yeah, because this match here, it's kind of like you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Either way, the match conclusion is. Because if you have Jericho go over, then it's like, why are you trying to build this character? But then if you have Fandango go over, then it's like, what are you doing with Chris Jericho? Why did you even bring him back if you're going to have him do a squash match? Because Fandango could easily do that with someone that's not as on this caliber. So it doesn't really make sense. Jericho go in against him because it's that damned if you do, damned if you don't type of thing.
This kind of gimmick can work. The problem is like, you know, there's been dancing comic relief gimmicks before. Like, you know, everybody remembers Disco Inferno and Alex Wright, and, you know, to a lesser extent, Rikishi and Too Cool. And you know, those guys were funny and entertaining in their own way. The problem was, is back then, we all knew they were mid-carders, and they were just booked as that. And then you have this Fandango guy, and, like, his first feud, he's feuding against, like, this multi-time world champion that's just, you know, that's not going to work for fans.
Yeah, the fans are already resenting him. I mean, he didn't even wrestle on Monday, and he got the You Can't Wrestle chance. And he's going to get a lot of that. I think he'll get a lot of boring chance. He'll be like the new Drew McIntyre, where the fans just, you know, crap on everything he does because they don't like where he's at, on where he's positioned on the card. Because I look at this Fandango character like I look at the Damian Sandows of the world and stuff. These gimmicks do not get over as main eventers. You know, if they're fine for the mid-card, but and this is what I always try to tell to Mike Knox on the Monday show before he cuts me off, is these gimmicks don't get over. They just don't. You know, you're not a ballroom effing dancer is not going to be a main eventer in WWE. A savant or whatever the hell Sandow is, who says all these big words and you know, has this professor gimmick, that's not gonna get that guy over. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, even to an extent, Cesaro, his character, it's not getting him over. I mean, his work rate aside, you know, he's
these guys have to drop this goofy crap to get over. Like, Triple H was never gonna be world champion doing that Greenwich snob crap, you know.
At best, he was King of the Ring and Intercontinental champ. So
that's the ceiling right there, is Intercontinental champ and maybe King of the Ring, and that's the ceiling. You know, you're not gonna get over with these goofy stuff. I mean, Lanny Poffo, everyone talks about the Lanny Poffo wasn't a main eventer. You know what I'm saying? The Genius was not a main eventer. Disco Inferno was not a main eventer. You know, these types of gimmicks where you're making these guys goofy as hell have shelf lives, and they're not going to be main eventers with these gimmicks. And that's kind of, you know, where I'm going. Even Dolph Ziggler, you know, Dolph Ziggler's not going to be a main eventer doing this goofy crap that he does now. It's not happening. Because I could name a total, like, a 0% of where, you know, these goofy-ass gimmicks have gotten somebody over. And in WCW or WWE, I mean, if you guys can name them, please do.
The only thing I can think of is he never got a push for it, but he was over. You guys remember Norman Smiley in WCW?
They weren't going to push him to the main event. But that was
it was over, though. Fans liked it.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I think Sandow is over, but, I mean, I don't think he's going to, you know what I'm saying? I don't think he's going to get to the, you know, he's not going to be fighting John Cena at WrestleMania anytime soon, you know? I guess you could count John Cena, but he kind of had to leave behind the rap stuff, you know, before they, you know, truly, like, you get to a certain point where the gimmick you have is gonna hamper you more than it does help you. And
Cena also had an evolution in the character too, because he came in as the prototype, and then he had, you know, the kind of heel rapper type thing, but he kind of evolved into his own. So.
Yeah. That's kind of what, and even, I mean, the character wasn't like as goofy as it is now. You know what I'm saying? It was kind of more of a, but these others, like the Damian Sandow, I think, You know, I hate to break it to Mike Knox every single week, but I keep telling, you know, dashing Cody Rhodes or whatever the fuck he is now, he's not getting over with the mustache gimmick. It's not happening. He's not, and when I say get over, become a main eventer, which is the only definition of over that WWE has nowadays, you know?
Cody might be a world heavyweight champion one day, but he's not winning that WWE title, no.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing with the world heavyweight title, or you, like, there are certain guys who win those belts one time and then they never see those titles again. And then there's guys who, once they win the title, they stay main eventers, you know. I firmly believe Dolph Ziggler's going to win the world title. I mean, yeah, he's going to win the world title. He's not going to be a main eventer, though. I mean, he'll win the world title, and then he'll go right, when he loses it, he'll go right back to being Dolph the loser, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. I mean, there's not much more to go on with it, you know, other than just winning the world title, other than some little feud that he's going to have. But I don't know. That's just one of the problems WWE has, too, without building credible, you know, opponents, this guy in the face, either in faces or anything else that they do. It's just going to – he's going to have the belt for a couple months, if that, and then he's just going to drop it back to, you know, a face. Like, he's either going to drop it back to Alberto Del Rio, or he's going to drop it to Sheamus, and they're going to try to run with that thing, which has failed, you know.
Obviously. The one good thing – oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I was done.
We talked about this last week. The one good thing that I will give this Mania is that many of these matches are so rushed, the build is so weak, that there's really no excuse why the world title shouldn't be the opener this year. I mean, they can open with any one of these matches, like Jericho Fandango can be the opener, the tag team title can be the opener, Ryback Henry can be the opener. Well, actually, no, I take that back. That should be like in the middle of the card. But you know what I mean.
No, I got you. I totally got you. I agree. I think that what both companies have to understand right now is both of them, I think, are kind of on an upward swing. Because even TNA, I think I wasn't a fan of I thought the whole – I still think the Aces and Eights thing is the goofiest thing on the planet. But I do appreciate Bully Ray for, cutting the promo he cut to get it over. I still have my reservations about Bully Ray being a world. I just don't think he's the guy to put in that spot. If they do something, I guess, where AJ Styles or one of the TNA dudes beat him after months, and that could work. But I still see Bully Ray as JBL. I don't see him as someone that is gonna move the needle for that company. But I do think that they're moving in the right direction. I think with WWE, I think that once they get fixed that undercard, they'll be right. I think they gotta fix the undercard. I don't think anything's wrong with the main event scene in WWE. I think they'll figure out Del Rio eventually, what this is stuff they want to do with him. But other parts of that show, it's not gonna work. We have a late caller calling in. Go, and I'll let you finish your thought, Chad. 319.
This is Andrew from Iowa.
Hey, what's up, Andrew?
What's up?
All right,
what's up?
I'm pretty sure the world title is not going to be the first match. There's just too much build up to it this year. It's pretty much the upper mid card match, like Jeff Hardy and Matt Hardy was, and Orton CM Punk.
I wouldn't say there's no chance that the world title is not going to be an opening card, but I see what you're saying. I think that this is a good year to not have it be the opening.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, they built up Edge Del Rio pretty good, and that's still open at 27. So
Ziggler's also on the card, and he's going for the tag title. So I'm pretty sure he's going to cash in at WrestleMania.
I think the positioning of that pay-per-view is going to tell a story. If that match isn't opening up the show, then I definitely think that we'll see an instance where Ziggler, Where Ziggler cashes it in. I think you do have a point on that. If that doesn't open up the card, then there's a.
I'm pretty sure Ezekiel, Rye Black. I mean Biggie. I get them mixed up sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It would be the perfect opportunity.
Yeah, sorry for the racist name, Rye Black. Sometimes I just call him that.
It's fine. I mean, everybody else.
Go ahead,
first memes that he debuted. But you know what? It would be the perfect opportunity for Ziggler to cash in, and if they wanted to make something out of it, because I don't think anyone's really cashed in on a WrestleMania card and you know, out of nowhere type of thing. If he cashed in for the World Heavyweight title, it would definitely add more to his push that he's going on, just having him cash in.
It'll be like, okay, you won the title at WrestleMania. You'll have some mediocre defenses after WrestleMania, but you'll have that, you could put that on your tombstone. No, I'll give you that, man. It's like,
see, I think that he's not gonna cash in because every time Ziggler's been coming out lately, Michael Cole reminds us that he has until July.
They remind us of that all the time. I noticed that on Monday too.
It's making me think they're gonna make him like. Oh, I'm sorry.
But I also do see what Andrew's saying also, because if they don't have that match open up the pay-per-view,
and like the tag match can be like one of the first matches, and that Ziggler doesn't have to be B, or if he is B, because he's jobbing anyways. But I think,
yeah, because Del Rio cashed in when he jobbed too.
But I think it'd make a little sense if like I keep forgetting his name. Biggie Langston got beat because he's always the one that beats down people. So it's like Ziggler's the one that runs away this time.
Well, they could do some little goofball finish too. They don't. I mean, neither of them get pinned. I still think they'll have. This is what I think is going to happen. Now that you mention it, I think that I'm going to go ahead and go out on the limb and say Ziggler does cash it in at Mania. I think Ziggler's going to do some boneheaded crap that gets him pinned in that match with Daniel Bryan. He's going to be pissed later on in the show that he got pinned, and he wins the world title. That's what I think happens. It's WWE, and their plans change up. I think WWE does need a little bit more predictability to it because there's just so many dudes on that show that don't matter.
Some people are theorizing that Daniel Bryan's going to screw him to get back at AJ for last year's 18-second job.
Mm-hmm.
This is over-predicting, but yeah.
I'm not
knocking anybody's prediction for this WrestleMania. I can't do it because this company is so all over the place. Go ahead, Chad.
I was going to say one thing that we talked about earlier that you said was in mid-card, you know, how stagnant it is. And I kind of see, you know, the WWE landscape kind of like we see the economy. You know, we have the upper guys, you know, the way it is. The upper guys are doing good. The lower guys are doing bad. But if you want to have something that's good and flourishing, you got to have that mid-card or you know, your middle-class people kind of coming on the up and, you know, there's more things going towards these people. You got to have, you know, your mid-card guys, you know, that can achieve to the upper level. And they can't just be stagnant. They can't be doing that. And that's why a reason we've seen for the past, was it three or four WrestleManias, why they've kind of crapped the bed, is because we've kind of seen nothing matches happen. But if you had these some importance going on this mid-card, you know, either on the way where you see guys on the up and up, climbing up, like your Kofi Kingstons, your Dolph Zigglers, you know, people that are stuck out of that scene, it would definitely add more prestige to WrestleMania, because part of the prestige in WrestleMania is in past. We're seeing your guys for the future, you know, guys that you want to have on your radar that you're going to see in the future of this company. And over the past 5 years, we haven't seen anything like that. It's always been the same guys on top. And, you know, everyone else is kind of in the same rotating thing where they're hot for a couple of months, and then after that they're on the back burner. And that's something that WWE definitely has to address. But they have to kind of build these guys up.
And they use the same formula for WrestleMania every season. It's like you have a good opener. It's like the second match is like, all right, it's a good match. Third match is whatever. And then the fourth segment's the Hall of Fame thing. And then the fifth match is like coming up as the big match. And then the other ones probably, and it's just exactly the same thing every year.
I'm just really confused that Biggie Langston and Fandango are on the card and your United States champion Cesaro isn't, that really confuses me.
I was actually hoping Mark Henry got injured because I wouldn't mind seeing Ryback and Antonio for the U.S. title, and then Ryback could just get over at WrestleMania and win the title.
I'd be okay with that.
Ryback is already, you know, what he's. I don't know if he's what he's destined to be, but he's destined for what
he
is right now.
He doesn't need to be the champion, but I just think, like, for the year he's had, I think it would be kind of cool just to see him get over at WrestleMania and just actually win the belt.
Well, he's good. Him beating Mark Henry means way more than him beating Cesaro at this point, because Cesaro is not doing anything. Cesaro's jobbing to The Miz every week.
For some reason, I just see Ryback losing Mark Henry because I think in their mind it's just like he's already been this big, and then it's like, okay, it's not going to hurt him if he loses Mark Henry because they want him to look unstoppable anyways.
From what I understand, Henry's on his way out, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be true. So, but anyway, I guess we should go ahead and end it now. We'll talk about Wolverine next month. It's getting kind of late, so we're out of here. Take care until next week.
All right, it was a good show.
All right, thanks, Andrew, for calling in.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, Toph. Thanks, Epps. Thanks, Chad.
Yeah, no problem, man. Have a good night.
Well, you too.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.